And now you're listening to the Made of Clay Report. And our guest this morning is Vicki Willoughby. Did I pronounce that right? Because we didn't check out the pronunciation.
You pronounced it perfectly.
Okay. So Vicki, it's good to have you here this morning. You've traveled down a ways to be here. We start the show with one big question. Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
I would have to say I am a marriage of spirit and form, and my life is the child of that union, and I do my best to live in the honeymoon of that connection.
That is a powerful metaphor.
It's the best one I got.
Sure. And what does that look like?
It looks like peace in my life, because I ended the battle within that many of us are waging between spirit and form, and what that connection really means.
Right. But it's not a version of peace that many people would know, which would be quietness, stillness, lack of motion.
Oh no, it's very dynamic.
Right. It's more known as more would be meant, what would be meant by graceful action or grace in action.
Well, I consider it an inner trinity.
Sure.
Many of us are trained to recognize a holy trinity. Mm-hmm. And for myself personally, that feels to me like a prison for the mind of something that is separate from us, for us to genuflect in front of and
right.
feel yeah. like is somewhat separate from us, or something to, you know, honor. Different people have different views of it. But to me, I look at it as an inner trinity,
mm-hmm.
like a prism for the heart
right.
and for our lives, that when we allow our life force to come through that prism, our life can display itself in rainbow colors that can be quite dynamic and beautiful. And I look at it as spirit is the husband and form is the wife, and those two are married.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's upon our birth or before our birth, different people look at that from different points of view as well.
Mm-hmm.
But from my perspective, the body that is the wife in this marriage said, I do, before it took its first breath,
mm-hmm.
and signed on for a lifetime contract, literally till death do we part,
right.
of taking on and moving through and with everything that spirit provides through the motion of this life moving forward.
And the body then is the grounding of the spirit.
Well, is the grounding, is the vehicle, mm-hmm. is the mm-hmm. communicator, the transmitter, the literally the loving, loyal wife, that which tries to provide to spirit whatever right. it chooses in this life.
Right.
Just
right.
like a good wife would.
Right, right. And I'm struck by the internal, external piece. And when you go fully internally, that can be enormously productive to people who have externalized. Have projected out all sorts of stuff rather than really process it internally.
For me, the feeling I get about it is that if we have fully logged into our inner relationship and have fully mm-hmm. taken charge of that relationship on the inner,
mm-hmm.
then that is the best foundation that I've found so far to be able to build our lives off from and out of, as the blossoming of that. It's like if that's a triangle
right.
of that trinity, if one part of it is slack, it's like a tricycle with a broken wheel. And everything just seems disjointed and not working mm-hmm. and chaotic.
Right.
But when you bring love into that relationship, when you bring consciousness and intention into that relationship and stop the inner argument that many of us have, because it could be, say, for a soccer mom, the alarm goes off, the body says, just 5 more minutes. And the mind says, what do you mean 5 more minutes? Get out of bed. You haven't even frosted the brownies for the bake sale yet, and it's carpool day. You should have been up 15 minutes ago. What are you doing still laying there? And it's an abusive, critical relationship that goes on for many of us.
Right, right. And so yes. And sometimes it's useful to go inside and make peace with that. Sometimes to see that, you almost have to project it outside so you can see what's going on inside. It's just a stance thing. It's a neat, you're very clear on that.
Well, we've been given the perspective of yeah. what a husband and wife are, and that's why I use those terms mm-hmm. for the analogy,
right.
because,
yeah.
you know, husband and wife, you know, father, mother, they have different roles potentially, because a mother can be a mother on her own. the
father. Right, and not all fathers have the same role and not all mothers. Exactly. But people do pair off and they do differentiate. Right, but
in a marriage, there is an understanding of a commitment and the roles that are played and what that entails to some degree. And I think that we have been taught to basically ignore the voice of our wife from the time that we're born. When the body is trying to communicate what it needs and what it's doing, we're taught other means to look at things and other means to define things, and taught to think that the body is wrong rather than revering it for the absolutely fantastic, dynamic blessing that it is.
Right. But it's also possible to not hear the body when you worship it. And that's a different problem. But what you've described, I want to stick with where you started though. This complementary relationship is what would in spiritual terms be called a covenant, where one does for the other what they cannot do for themselves,
right.
And one asks of the other what they cannot do for oneself, but needs to have kind of that complementary, in the sense of completing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And if there is reverence and honor and love brought into that relationship, then it can be like a well-oiled machine that just brings your life out in such vibrant beauty that it's astounding.
Right. And in that context, profound differences cease to be a problem and they are a joy.
Exactly.
Because they allow one to hold on to and to do and to be aware of things you would never know about yourself and others.
Yes. This idea came to me in a download, so to speak,
sure.
A revelation. And when I started taking it really personally, I started to consider if I had an outer husband that was the best husband I could imagine, how would he treat me? And I started treating myself that way,
mm-hmm.
as if I was already in the best marriage that I could imagine, and continued to hold that and continued to have that inner conversation where if the alarm's going off and my body says 5 more minutes, then the husband says, honey, you take 10. You've been working hard.
Yeah.
And gives support and loving responses.
Right.
I no longer allow disrespect and criticism in my inner conversation.
Right, right. And I wouldn't equate disrespect and criticism, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Well, constructive criticism is one thing.
Yeah, yeah. But the outer husband was what I meant by the outer projection,
mm-hmm.
going outside to come back in.
Right.
That's a very powerful story. And it does come like a whole experience. You feel it intensely.
Well, the child is the product of that. So if you feel like your life is running off the rails, then that's the child turning to the parents and saying, you two get along. Your outer projection will show you what's going on the inside if you choose to look.
Yep.
Many do not.
Yes. And yes. And yes. And the reality of conflict and the reality of peace can live in the same space.
Absolutely.
Without
the separation and the oneness in the same space.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what projects out to the world. If we expect to find peace in the world, we have to find it inside of ourselves. Otherwise, we're going to project the conflict. We're going to mirror that. That's what we're going to see.
We have dived in deeper from the first words than I think I have in a while. But you brought some music with you. What would you like to open with?
Well, I'm going to go exactly the opposite of what we talked about and say, play the Harlem Boys Choir.
Okay. Okay. And do you want to say anything
about
it before we play it?
It just is sort of what I keep as my anthem in my heart for the rest of the world.
Here's Let There Be Peace on Earth with the Harlem Boys Choir.
Thank you.
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Vicki Willoughby. So Vicki, where we go next, where I like to go next, you've already described the impact of the imagining what a good husband would be and projecting that relationship to your inner self relationship with yourself. What did you have to go through in life to come to the point where you would either seek that or be so or clear about? What did you have to learn about life in order to, in a certain sense, understand the life you want to live now and how to live it? What did you have to go through?
Stress. Yes. Diving head first into the stress pool of life will do it for you. Yeah.
And just not hitting the bottom of the pool with your head and breaking your neck. Or maybe that too. So.
Yeah, well, you know, what I went through, most of the people who love me in life would have saved me from if they could have.
Sure.
And they would have saved me from the biggest blessing that I could imagine. Oh, geez, you had to talk about being emotional before. I don't usually do that, but we'll see how this goes.
Sure.
Just 10 and a half years ago, I dove headfirst into stress, and I'm usually the go-to person for most of my community that I'll just, you know, pull them out if something's going on. And I found myself diving headfirst into the pool of stress and found myself in University Hospital in Syracuse for 19 days with sepsis, with kidney failure, liver failure, and in the process of trying to recover from that, was inspired to a sinus hemorrhage that filled my stomach and almost my lungs to the point where I heard, warning, 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
Like the Lost in Space robot was a friend of mine. And during the process of that whole situation, I found myself in the Valley of the Shadows and literally said, God, you better carry me because I can't walk. And I heard over my shoulder, darling, don't you see I got you? That's why they put all those, you know, plaques and calendars with only one set of footprints in the sand. And I looked to my right and I was looking at waves rolling up on the beach, and I had a pineapple shell drink with an umbrella and a straw, and it was a beautiful sky, and God was calling me darling and said I could stay if I wanted to. And also said, if you choose to go back to your life, it'll be better than anything you ever imagined. And I had a 6-year-old beside my bed wondering if mom was going to come home. So I said, sold, and came back to my life. And that's the second time in my life I've been given a choice that I chose my life. Mm-hmm. And in the grand scheme of what we see in the outer world and what we hold in the inner world, mm-hmm. I understand at this point that my life is my choice. Right. Even in the arms of God, it was my choice, right, whether or not to live this life. Right. And since I chose it, I asked for it, it's gravy. There's absolutely nothing to complain about because I could have stayed at the beach with God and not be doing this life. So it gives me such appreciation, and especially for my body, because in the process of sepsis, I didn't think I would come home with my left leg intact, and my body is whole. It is healing, it is youthing, and it is improving every day. And I love this life so much, and I'm so grateful that I chose it. And with the fact that I have, I feel like it's such a gift and it's to be shared. Because if I believed in sin, it would be to be filled with love and not share that.
Mm-hmm. What you have described is a sense of agency, a sense of efficacy, a sense of self-determination, not individualism, not control, but just choice, mm-hmm. within the larger stream of things.
Free will choice is our gift.
Yeah. And it's within a context, but it's our choice.
Absolutely.
And
I'm just speechless. Have I already?
No. I just most people don't appreciate that people who are struggling to make a choice or to struggle are just struggling often don't realize how the choices they might have and how those choices might add up, and the pointless, you know, just twisting in the wind or banging your head against the wall seems, you said, if people had succeeded in rescuing you, you never would have faced that choice. You never would have had that skill. You might have died in the process. That's on a certain level fine too. We're all going to die. People often don't hear this message really clearly because it's how we hold those around us who suffer. They're suffering. We aren't. When that's the case, mm-hmm. we cannot rescue them, but we can be a presence in their lives. I mean, we can be a power, I think, is what you're, what we're going to get there. But we oftentimes do not respect the struggles that others have as their struggles. And we want to either try to fix them or dismiss them or blame something for them. And they are the match from which we will secure a blessing.
Well, I feel like we're sort of trained to focus more on the struggle than on the person, on the fact that they're someone's child, that they have a heart that wants to love, that, you know, that the struggles that we go through are like the sandpaper and the honing tool of our right. lives that well, really sharpen our blades, so to speak. And right. to save people from themselves is not a service.
Right. No, the first, that's, yes. And in a profound sense, if a child has grown into adulthood, they have learned that. And some of us don't learn that until long into the years of what we would hope to be adulthood. But that's part of becoming whole as a human being.
I feel like our social structure is set up for us to think that there are others that are parental
right.
and that are protective, that will take care of us, mm-hmm. and that sort of slows our maturity and responsibility to our own lives and our own role in it. If we counted more on ourselves and what our assets are to be able to focus more on our gifts, then it would be an entirely different dynamic. Listening to Greg Braden over the course of time, as I've listened to many different thought leaders mm-hmm. and the pearls that they offer, he said that the question has changed. It used to be, what can I get from the world? And now the question is, what can I give to the world that's emerging? Mm-hmm. Because we receive so much more in the giving than in the quest to receive and the quest to accumulate, that when we give of the gifts that come from our heart, what we came with, what is screaming to get out of us, then we can be blessed. That's why the gift is in the giving. It's like, let your song out, you know?
Right, but... And I'm going to continue with this concept of covenant. You don't do for or give other people what they can do for themselves.
And
this is where it gets some discernment is helpful. But you also do step in with stuff that they can't. And
yes.
when you see somebody in a struggle, you can appreciate that with awe and wonder and be curious about where you might have a place in it, but respect that it's their struggle.
Well, giving love is something that can always be done without overriding the other person or whatever they're going through.
Right. It depends on what you mean by love.
Well, to me, love is an expression that comes from your heart. It's about a way of being and an expression of energy, for lack of a better term,
right.
more so than the doing of it. And that loving another person would be at their request, not at your insistence, whether they like it or not, so to
right.
speak.
And so for me, what I would say is loving, love is regard for the wholeness of the other.
Yes.
And that's just it. I have no idea what needs to happen with that wholeness. I have no idea what can make it. I don't even define it for the other.
Right. In that place, I allow the love in my heart to compel me to whatever is being called for, so to speak.
And then seeing if it's received or how it's received.
Yes, it can be received in many different ways. Right. Some people ask for love that they refuse as soon as you start to give it to them.
Right, Right. And some people don't ask and can't take, or they don't ask, but they receive a wonder and a surprise that they never imagined.
To me, that's part of why it's important to have a solid inner trinity, because then you don't feel rejected when other people say no, or, you know, when they don't take it well.
Right.
When you say, I had this discussion with somebody yesterday that I had borrowed some space, you know, in a resort place from family, and left a note afterwards saying, you know, thank you so much, and I tried to leave it better than I found it. And the person that read that took it as I was insulting the condition of the place as I walked into it. And my expression entirely was that I did my best to respect your offering to me. Thank you.
Right.
Was my expression of it. I can't gauge how the other person receives that. All I can do is know that from my own heart, I gave the best that I had to offer and release whatever their experiences of it as their chosen experience from where they are, and let that be okay and not find conflict with it.
Right. Or realize that there is, from their point of view, a state of conflict in your relationship. Because what?
Well, I don't necessarily consider it a point of conflict in our relationship, but I see that they are conflicted on the inside. Because if they had a solid inner trinity going on, then they wouldn't find conflict with me. They're, to me, I feel that they're showing me their inner relationship with their divine connection, and it has precious little to do with me, but it shows informs me about them.
Right, and this is where you we differ just a little bit. I would allow them to define our relationship as much as I would.
Oh, well.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that I know for certain they have an inner conflict. That's my perception.
Okay.
It's just a very subtle, I think, because we're coming from a very similar sort of place.
It is very subtle when you work in those realms of things.
Yeah.
And having clear definition and understanding is key.
But it allows us to have this conversation,
absolutely,
which is powerful. And one of the things is, by meeting other people like this, there's an assumption that we meet as equal human beings, not as the same. We all have fundamentally different skills and challenges and all sorts of stuff. But we are forces in the universe to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we're not defined by our status in a family system, by our role in a profession, by our per training or any of these other things. We are just persons encountering each other. That is very hard for a lot of people to accept, because they want to see who are you, and not in terms of a human being, but in terms of what are your skills, what are your status, do I need to be deferential to you? Do you need to be deferential to me? Those kinds of partial views of each other, which is in a certain sense how we've become an affluent society, have diminished our ability to know how to be persons, to be forces to be reckoned with as persons, which is what you're describing very fully.
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you find the place of knowing who you are and how you want to move forward, but then you're also in the place of gauging your audience, so to speak. It's like, who do I need to be in relation to you? Like in the work that I do as a Reiki master, working with people, it's like, this is what I have to offer, but what is it that you need? And where can we find common ground between those two things? Because just because I have something to offer doesn't mean that you would choose it. And just because you have a need doesn't mean that what I have can fill it.
Right. And what I may offer, you may inspire in me something that I didn't know I had, because I can adapt it in a way that I didn't know that I could or should. And I may offer you something you never imagined. So after some playing around or experimenting with the idea or entertaining the relationship, you may be able to receive something you never thought you could.
Absolutely.
That is the beauty of this process of discovery as persons to be, forces to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. And you know what? Can we go to the next
song?
Sure,
yeah. I was about to ask for that.
I was feeling that, because the Jason Mraz Have It All, that's basically my motto in life, is that if I can help anyone else that comes before me get as much of what they would like in this life as I can help them get, then that just affirms that I have it to give.
Right.
And is a blessing between the two. So I would like everybody to have it all. There'd be so much less fighting then.
Here we go.
Good morning. It looks like another beautiful day in Richmond. The sun is shining and the birds are singing. So make sure you get out there today and say hi to your neighbor.
May you have auspiciousness and causes of success. May you have the confidence to always do your best. May you take no effort in your being generous, sharing what you can, nothing more, nothing less. May you know the meaning of the word happiness. May you always lead from the beating in your chest. May you be treated like an esteemed guest. May you get to rest, may you catch your breath. May the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows. Whoa. May the road less paved be the road that you follow. Whoa. Well, here's to the hearts that you gonna break. Here's to the lives that you gonna change. Here's to the infinite possible ways to love you. I want you to have it. Here's to the good times we gonna have. You don't need money, you got a free pass. Here's to the fact that I'd be sad without you. You to have it all. Slap bracelet. May you keep the chaos and the clutter off your desk. May you have unquestionable health and less stress. Having no possessions, though immeasurable wealth. May you get a gold star on your next test. May your educated guesses always be correct. And may you win prizes shining like diamonds. May you really own it each moment to the next. Or may the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows. Whoa. Or may the road less paved be the road that you follow. Oh. Well, here's to the hearts that you gonna break. Here's to the lives that you gonna change. Here's to the infinite possible ways to love you. I want you to have it. Here's to the good times we gonna have. You don't need money, you got a free pass. Here's to the fact that I'd be sad without you. I want you to have it all.
Your path is, if you believe it, then anything can happen. Go, 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 raise your glasses. Go, 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 you can have it all. I toast you. Here's to the hearts that you're gonna break. Here's to the life.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Vicki Willoughby. So Vicki, what I want to talk about now is, with that understanding of love, personhood, male, female, husband, wife, all of those, that trinity in yourself, with that understanding and transformation of your life, how did that affect your, how you made a living? How you have kind of taken on the work in the years since then?
Well, the Inner Trinity Inspiration,
sure,
came sort of as a download, and that was actually only about 2.5 years ago.
So that can help pull things together after you'd been doing this for a while.
Yeah, I've been doing interpersonal work for a long time.
Yeah.
But this particular revelation has, when I asked others who are close to me, they said anybody'd have to be an idiot not to see how much this has strengthened you.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, opening your tripod and setting yourself up. So it makes me much more stable in my ability to hold space for other people, mm-hmm, I think, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, in whatever space it is that they need at the time.
Right.
And more able to discern that, because when I'm not in the chaos of my own inner relationship, that being off balance and not stable.
And anxious. It's, and
right,
fretful, yeah.
Right. When I'm not operating from a place of my own angst this way or that, pulling, mm-hmm, and tugging, and I feel like I have a solid tripod, then it puts me in a position of being able to hold, I think, a more stable space for those who need a stable space to find their own light and their own way to that. And not that I wasn't able to do it before, it just kind of tempered my mettle, so to speak, if I can,
right,
use that term.
Well, and it consolidated learning into a fairly straightforward understanding that you can share with others.
Well, it's also sort of provided a prism through which I can see things more clearly. Mm-hmm. Where others are concerned, that it's easier for me to help discern and define for them if they're having a hard time seeing their own forest through the trees.
Right, right.
Because I'm apart from it.
Right.
Since I'm not in my own, you know, then I can be more of an asset.
Right. And you use the word hold space.
Yes.
For others. And so one of the things that I do that people don't understand is I host conversations among people who didn't know each other before.
Mm-hmm.
And my role is to hold space for the group, for the whole. It's not really a group, it's a gathering.
Right.
A group implies more of an organization with rules and agendas.
It's a community
and
a communion.
It's just a being.
Mm-hmm.
A gathering, and not everybody's there every time because there are other things in their lives that pull them in other directions, and people have a hard time often understanding that because, you know, if you're going to have a group, you have to show up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true if you trust people are living the lives that they're called to live. You hold the space, mm-hmm. and it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's an idea which is most of us have grown up in the last half century or so on the idea that leisure restores us. We go out and do activities that are, quote, leisure activities that will kind of somehow restore us. I have never found that worked. You know, I can go out and play, but that's not the same as being in a space with other people where we're just together. That, to me, restores in a very profound human sort of way. And it doesn't involve any material consumption or very little.
Right.
Maybe coffee, tea, or something to share, or a meal. But it's something that one does as you're doing other things. Anyway, that's what I project into when you say holding space. That's how I embody holding space for people. What did you mean by holding space?
Well, that could be as individual as the individual.
Sure.
But generally, when I say holding space, I connect with a person in as a Reiki master and a reverend in the healing work that I do with people.
One-on-one.
Yes.
Yes.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
I listen into what the person really desires in their life, what it is that they want, and the way I mentally mm-hmm. imagine it is that if I was holding my arm around their shoulder, you know,
right.
and this person is here under my arm, in that space where I am holding them, literally.
Right.
But
it's
imagine,
to the side. It's not face to face. So it has a quality of your individuality is maintained.
Right. It's like I'm putting my arm around the shoulder of a friend who is looking for things to move in a direction that they would like, is my mental imagery of it.
Yep.
And in that space, I imagine them with the feelings that they want to have as a result of what it is that they're thinking about. Just as an example, I had a next door neighbor. He's my favorite. He's in the DPW arts. Our street always got plowed first, you know. He's an awesome guy. And one day he put a for sale sign up in his house. He's like, well, I got to get an extra job at Domino's or something if I'm going to, because all these things are happening in my life. And he just proceeded to pour out about how it was he was feeling and what it was he wanted. And I said, I am holding the space for you for everything to work out with your job and your love life and your home and everything just exactly as you would like it. And the way I imagine him in that space, it's not about the things around him. Mm-hmm. It's about the feeling coming from him,
mm-hmm.
that he is feeling on purpose, that he's feeling fulfilled, that his face is smiling, he's feeling relaxed, he's feeling happy, like life is just showing up in such wonderful ways that all the love in his heart just wants to pour out. And I told him that I didn't describe it to that extent. We're talking to a DPW guy. I just told him I was holding the space for everything that he wanted to work out. And about a month later, I saw him kissing a young lady goodbye in her car as she was leaving. And I said, who's that? And he said, Sarah. Friends thought that we would get along. Turns out we do. And then he said, well, I'm going to a meeting with the mayor because I'm up for supervisor of the DPW. And so 3 days later, I took him a plate of cookies and said, am I delivering these to the new supervisor of the DPW? He said, you are.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay. And then a few months later, he said, I got some bad news. I said, what's that? I said, I'm not going to be able to be your neighbor anymore. I said, why not? He said, because Sarah's pregnant. She's due right about the time I get my 15-year increment from the DPW, and I'm moving in with her, and we're getting married. and I'm selling the house. And I said, oh my goodness. He said, ever since you told me you were holding that right. space, my life has consistently moved that way. And I hold it as the imagination creates. Mm-hmm. So I create a space where the person has the feeling that they tell me they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I hold that space and I look at it like setting their GPS, their mm-hmm. God mm-hmm. or goddess positioning right. system. And that space is already created as an invitation. And they either move toward it or they do not. It's up to them. I hold a space that you can choose to occupy if you would like. And I did it with one of my students who's an MD. I called her one day, and she happened to be standing in the room that she thought would be her new office at this location she was choosing. And a couple years later, she said, you know, it took me a year and a half, but when I got your phone call and I was standing in what I thought would be my new office, and you said, I'm holding the space for everything to work out perfectly for you, I knew it was going to be fine, and I just moved forward. Mm-hmm. And I have the confidence that people wish they had a lot of the time to move forward. So right. it's kind of that they borrow mine because I let them know this space is created. It's here for you. It already exists and you can move toward it as you wish.
Right, right. And I'm gonna play with this in some other ways just because I love the clarity with which you have described it. You said that you have the confidence that others wish they had, mm-hmm. And confidence in the center of confidence is fi, which is faith, which has historically mm-hmm. been defined as trust and hope. Mm-hmm. And hope is not hope is a stance of openness, mm-hmm. and you can't be open unless you trust that you'll be able to mm-hmm. roll with whatever happens, you know, in some way. And what I have found is that when people are relaxed and in your, to use your word, loving, mm-hmm. loving themselves, loving others, when they are relaxed and open in that way, they see options that they would have overlooked mm-hmm. had they been anxious or stressful. I'm just trying to describe this, the way this may work in ways that other people from different points of view can hook in to and understand your practice. They may not accept Reiki. They may not accept some of the other work you do, mm-hmm. but this is you have, from my point of view, named a process which is pretty universal. Mm-hmm. And when people relax into their lives and what's possible, they see things that they couldn't see when they were frantic.
I call it faith.
Yeah. Well,
but
yeah.
It's like my ministry, We Have Wellness. Mm-hmm. It's a ministry of wellness, not a ministry of spirituality or mm-hmm. religion sure. or anything yeah, like yeah. that. Excuse me. My faith is that I am able to move forward into any situation that life presents to me with an open, loving heart, offering the best that I have to it in any given moment. That is what my faith is. Mm-hmm. It is my faith in my own foundation, my ability to be loving. It is not shakable or removable or questionable by anyone.
Right.
Because they don't have access to my faith.
Right, right.
They have to build their own.
And that is what I'm going to interpret here. You can correct me if I'm wrong, that you began to find in your 40s and you have lived into over the course of this last decade.
Well, actually, it started more in my 20s. It's been
right.
going on for a long time.
Okay, no, the process, but in terms of being able to have the resolve that you have now, mm-hmm. or maybe the resolve is just in the last 2.5 years since you had this real kind of download experience. I began with the notion that anybody is worth loving and is worth connecting to. And I began with this as a teenager or younger. Mm-hmm. It's been a part of my life from day one. But I hit a moment of intense, or not a moment, but two or three decades of intense disappointment mm-hmm. and bitterness, where even though I could bounce back with that, but then I just couldn't hold it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't grounded. It wasn't fully planted there. And what's happened for me in more recent years is it's much more solidly planted.
Mm. I feel like I started with it solidly planted. I was born the last of 8. and to a mother who was 48 years old and had already raised 7 other kids. And I grew up feeling that I was loved unconditionally by my entire family. And I grew up in that cocoon and mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. that foundation and with that solidity of their faith was a little bit different than mine, mm-hmm. but with that foundation. And I feel like once I got 18 to 21 and out in the adult world, that got peeled away. And I did go through a sufficient amount of disappointment sure. and trying to negotiate life. But then about 30 years in, I had people, there were 3 or 4 different people who reappeared in my life from back in my teenage years that I knew when I was 17 and 18 years old. I said, do you remember? You took me to the Oswego campus and I never considered higher education. And I put myself through school and now I've been, you know, doing this and telling me stories of how my love for them and what I exposed them to yeah. opened up things in their lives and they just fertilized that and let it bloom into something entirely different. And some were, you know, friendships I thought I'd lost that came back to me and said, you inspired me and this is what fueled the rest of my life. So when I got that feedback, and that was in my 40s mostly, it really became so clear to me how incumbent it is on us to treat others with respect and with the love that we have in our hearts. And that was just what I knew growing up. That's who I was, and that's what I did. And when it got reflected back to me how impactful and powerful and important that was mm-hmm. to other people, it really came home to roost, so to speak.
Right.
And that the words you say, how you say them, who you say them to, and the heart you say them from can make all the difference in whether or not somebody else is inspired in their life.
Right, right. And as you say that, and I want to affirm the truth of that. It's also not about perfectionism. It's about saying the truth that you have, saying the words that you have in whatever form you can muster them, and working with what then happens because you are engaged in this process called life.
I consider perfectionism to be an exercise in futility.
Yeah, no,
because
either
everything
is
or isn't.
It is, but when people hear you want to frame the words in this way, there are people who want to learn a formula to how mm-hmm. to live, and that will suddenly become a practice that becomes a little bit on the obsessive side. Okay? And all I'm saying is that the practice is the practice.
Yes.
And you do what you do, and it will fall short in some instances, or you don't know how another person will respond. That's the response, is how they will respond. That response is their issue. And finding that way to navigate is just by the practice.
Right. I can only be responsible for the energy that I bring to my space.
And I can't even be fully responsible for that because I don't understand it. It's more than what I can own. It didn't start with me, and I do not own it.
Well, that's true, too. I feel like we're just sort of navigators of our source energy. And as abhorrent as it is, I'm actually going to say this on the air.
Sure.
I am a sorceress, and so are you. Anyone who, sorcerer for you personally.
But you're going to the root of the term.
But I spell that S-O-U-R-C-E-R-E-R, because we are the qualifiers of our source energy. We have been put in the position of being the administrators of that source energy through our free will. And I feel like we need to take responsibility for that choice, because the only reason that the word sorcerer is scary is they took you out of it.
That is I love the way you have worked that out. And it allows Christians and Jews and Muslims and Buddhists and all and Hindus and everyone of and Baha'is and nativists, all sorts of folks to relate to this.
If your God is love, what difference does it make what you call it?
Well, yes, the issues, the context of our individual lives are mediated by institutions, and institutions care. We need to be aware of that, but that doesn't take away the fact that the issues are bigger than the institutions.
Yeah, our governing factor right. and our power to govern our own source energy is so much more than those institutions are comfortable with allowing us to know.
Right. Right. And I grew up in a Christian tradition that grew, that came into being on the frontier and grew to be equal to Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians, because it understood that power, the power of persons free to form and exercise and relate to each other by their choices and be responsible for those choices. We haven't seen anything like it since, and it was the movement of the 19th century. It gave us two deeply flawed but important presidents, Lyndon Johnson and Ronald Reagan. But we haven't really gone back, because we've become dependent, as you had said, on what this idealized mom or dad or this institution could do to take care of us, rather than to step out and live the life.
From my view, we've been conditioned to think that other people's voices are more important than our own, because in the beginning is the word, but they don't tell you that it's your word. And that if you believe that God is love, the voice of God comes through your lips with every word you speak.
Right. And it's all of our voices, each one no more important than the other, but no less.
Well, love is speaking.
And that is, yeah. and so we listen, and we listen imperfectly, and we listen wholly.
Well, yes, wholly, because if we are the light, then we need contrast to the light to experience ourselves as the light. Neil Donald Walsh, in Conversations with God, there's a children's book taken out of that called The Little Soul in the Sun. And I have used that as a healing tool with so many, because this little light goes to God and says, I know what I am. But I want to experience myself as that. And God says, okay, we'll surround you with the darkness. Will I be afraid of it? Only if you choose to be, because you cannot experience up without down, here without there, now without then.
Or self without other, and separation, and unity without separation. I mean, these are...
Yes, yeah, the law of opposites dictates that first the exact opposite must show up before you can experience whatever you would choose to experience, because we can only experience in relation to and in contrast.
Right, and integrate. I am the seventh of eight children. I did not have. I was a replacement baby to replace one who died after a deep depression and mental health episode for my mother.
That's a heavy role for you.
And my father. I know it was. And it has been an interesting ride. And my father died when I was seven. So those deaths shaped a lot, but I also got opened up to the regard of people born in the 1880s and 1890s and early 1900s, who were the ones who kind of took an interest in me that I was aware of. And that shaped much of my sense of, you know, you can do, or you can, or you ought to be able to do. Not ought, but there's a wide world out there, and go love it.
My parents were born in 1912 and 1913, I understand what you mean.
And that was kind of the break point, because if it came too much later, they were shaped too much by the affluence of the 1920s and then the loss of the Depression. There's a real striking moment. Anyway, I want to shift gears a bit.
Okay.
What do you do to take care of yourself throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly? What do you do emotionally, intellectually, physically? You may not separate those things, but we sometimes behaviors or actions or thoughts are helpful to share. Part of the show is helping people to overhear what other people do to try to live. And so I'm putting it to you.
Well, I stay logged into my interrelationship, and I defer to my wife, because my body gives me the messages of what it needs, whether it's rest, nourishment, encouragement, whatever. And I don't speak ill of my body ever. I speak wellness into the cells that I am the community of. And I foster them as best I can, between having my own garden and being a young living family member, educator, and user of essential oils that carry the wisdom that speak to ourselves, because we are made from the earth, and they bring the wisdom of the earth to help us rebalance. I take time in nature. Now that I have a job in Ithaca, walk in the falls, lunch break, things like that, I make sure to connect with our mother on a regular basis. I connect with those in my community and my ministry on a regular basis, and I try to let all my love out. I feel like that's the most important thing.
Right, right,
Right. It's a struggle to hold it back.
Right, right. And I just, everything you have described speaks to a form of knowledge that is visceral or emotional. And it's what we would call, in traditional terms, it's knowledge that is apprehended as opposed to comprehended. It almost takes over.
Okay.
You feel it in your body.
Yes.
You know it in your body. And that is something which is not necessarily something which you intellectually know, but you can recognize it mm-hmm. and you can act on it. We have lived in such an intellectualized, rationalized, scientized culture for so long that it's very hard sometimes for people to just accept that we know things in this apprehended, physical, emotional sort of way. I mean, you're choosing to live there.
Mm-hmm.
How also do you work with the intellectual side and the skill that you need? It's another triangle: intellect, mm-hmm. emotion, and body.
There are so many.
How do you work the intellectual piece of that in your life?
According to what's asked for. I feel like I live by invitation. People invite me into their space to. Like I did with you mm-hmm, when
sure.
we met. I make an introduction, I make an offering, and people choose to accept or they don't. And I move forward using my entire trinity, because you have to feel your way through life. I feel like we've been excessively intellectualized with that gauge being outside of ourselves more so
right.
than anything.
And that is one of the nifty things about intellectual stuff can objectify, whereas the apprehended physical knowledge, you can never really objectify that. You can be somewhat objective about it, but it's in your
body.
Well,
to me, that's the now. That's the living
yeah.
of it. That's
yeah.
the being in it. And either you are living as a product of the past in apprehension of the future,
right.
or you're being in the present moment. And the only way to really, so to speak, recondition ourselves, which is what I feel like we're in the process of doing, is reconditioning ourselves to the programming that we choose to have, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to the programming that happened pre 7 years old or through the media or whatever
right.
has conditioned us.
Right, right. And as comprehend often means intellectually understand, apprehend doesn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an interesting play on the words here, because that's a body that's anxious, apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're apprehending something, you're using the full force of your physical being to know it, and to engage it, and to, in a certain sense, own it.
Well, to me, that's the oneness, you know, that's the marriage. That's the husband and wife coming together so that that which is energetic, and that which is form
mm-hmm.
are informed by each other. And it's that tuning fork, so to speak,
right.
that moves things forward and that gives us the gauge. And we have a lot of grist for the mill to figure out how to navigate, negotiate, and discern at this point in time, if that's what we're calling it.
Right. And the word know in English means physical knowledge, sexual knowledge, intellectual knowledge, friendship, you know, it means acquaintance. That word know has so many meanings, which is rich in the kind of work that we do. And sometimes the efforts to make kind of a false precision, almost like a scientific precision, takes us out of that integrated way of knowing.
I think narrowing down to the one is sort of backwards. We need to open to the one,
right? Yeah,
so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah. I'm you're demonstrating your practice as we talk. So, no, I met you when I was at the dental office getting a procedure, and you helped to kind of relax me while my tooth was being worked on, and that was a very powerful moment and very effective, and this was a very powerful connection, and that's how I met you, and then decided I need to invite you onto the show. So, do you want to say more about your practice locally, or?
Well, sure. I've just started working in what is my niece's practice that she has gotten into collaboration with Ira Camp, and they're have a dental practice together at, let's see, what is it, 1025 Tioga Avenue in Ithaca. And I'm offering reflexology and Reiki to those in the chair that are feeling distressed or feel welcoming to that procedure. And it's just an offering, if people would choose, to bring some peace to a space that can be horrific for some people.
Right, and it's all by choice. And they have several different people who practice in different modalities who assist with this kind of relaxation, integration, and feeling in the
time. It's about offering connection beyond just the procedural.
Sure. Vicki, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
It's been fun. I so appreciate the invitation, Eric. It's been a blessing.
So what should we, what should we close the show with? What music would you like to close?
Well, I was going to choose John Lennon, Imagine, because I think that's an awesome song, but I'm gonna go with America, You Can Do Magic, because I think we all need to consider the magic that we can do in this life.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you, Eric.
See, I said if I can't feel it, then how could it be? No, no magic could happen to me. And then I saw you, I couldn't believe it. You took my heart, I couldn't retrieve it. Said to myself, what's it all about? Now I know there can be no doubt. Magic.